Imagine an airport, not just a place where planes land or, a simple transit point. Think bigger. Imagine a literal national gateway, a bustling city within a city, and, well, a multi-billion dollar enterprise that's facing its single biggest transformation ever. Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into Auckland International Airport Limited. You probably know it by its ASX ticker, AIA.AX. We're not just dissecting a company here, we're exploring really a foundational piece of New Zealand's critical infrastructure and honestly the very fabric of its economy.
And our mission today is, well, to cut through the noise and extract the most important nuggets of knowledge from a truly comprehensive investment analysis report on AIA. We want to help you, our listener, really understand the complex forces at play for this strategic asset. Think of it as your express lane to being truly well-informed, hopefully packed with surprising facts and just enough humor to keep you absolutely hooked.
Exactly. Whether you're curious about how major infrastructure projects reshape economies, maybe you're fascinated by the intricate business of global travel, or perhaps you just love a good aha moment that connects seemingly disparate ideas. Well, this deep dive is absolutely for you. So settle in because we're about to explore AIA's bold, multi-billion dollar bet on the future.
Okay, so to start, let's frame what Auckland International Airport truly represents. It's a premier, regulated, monopoly infrastructure asset. That's key. But right now, it's not just humming along. It's embarking on what's unequivocally described as a transformative, multi-billion dollar capital expenditure program. This isn't just an upgrade. It's really a once-in-a-generation investment. It's crucial for securing the future of New Zealand's primary international gateway, meticulously designed to accommodate not just a few years, but decades of projected growth in tourism and trade. We're talking about laying the groundwork for the next 50 years of travel and economic activity, basically.
But it's definitely not all smooth sailing, right? I mean, the report makes it clear this kind of undertaking comes with some significant turbulence. We're looking at serious near to medium term risks surrounding the actual project execution, keeping those massive builds on time and on budget. That's tough. Then there's heightened regulatory scrutiny from various watchdogs and apparently a really contentious relationship with its core airline customers. It sounds like managing this project is less like flying a plane and maybe more like juggling a dozen flaming chainsaws.
Huh, that's a vivid image, and it captures the complexity perfectly. It really does. This brings us right to the central investment question for anyone trying to understand AIA. Can management successfully navigate the immense challenges of its infrastructure program? We're talking about executing on time and, crucially, on budget amidst a persistent inflationary environment. That's a huge factor right now. And at the same time, managing a fractious pricing environment with both airlines and regulators. The ability to deliver strong, accretive returns on this massively expanded capital base, well, that will be the ultimate determinant of value creation. If they succeed, it would not only secure the airport's long-term earnings power, but also fully unlock the latent value of its strategic land holdings and its, frankly, unassailable monopoly position. That would ultimately justify a premium valuation. However, failure to do so, well, that could result in significant value destruction. Think cost overruns, maybe dilutive capital raisings that hurt existing shareholders, and potentially even a more punitive regulatory regime down the track. It's high stakes, truly a make-or-break period for AIA.
Definitely sounds like it. So, how does an operation of this scale and complexity actually make its money? The report describes it as having a dual-engine business model, which sounds pretty intriguing. Is it fair to say that while the airport feels like a monopoly, its true growth story is actually less about planes and maybe more about real estate? Is it fundamentally changing its identity?
You've hit on a core insight right there. It truly is a dual identity. Let's dive into the first engine, what's called the regulated utility segment. This is the core aeronautical business. Landing charges, passenger fees, that kind of thing. It acts as a natural monopoly, generating stable, predictable cash flows. Or at least that's the theory. It operates under a light-touch regulatory framework, specifically Part 4 of the Commerce Act 1986. Now, this is a crucial distinction. Unlike a traditional utility where the regulator sets the prices, here the Commerce Commission monitors performance and reviews pricing, but crucially does not have the power to set prices directly. It's more like a negotiation based on oversight. Historically, that gave AIA a fair degree of autonomy compared to, say, a power company.
Okay. And it sounds like that light touch framework is now facing some unprecedented scrutiny from the Commerce Commission and vocal opposition from its airline partners. So the light touch might be getting a bit heavier, perhaps, shifting the balance of power.
It certainly feels that way. The pressure is palpable. Now let's explore the revenue of this regulated aeronautical segment. Aeronautical income is directly linked to aviation activity, which, you know, makes perfect sense. Planes fly, they pay. We saw a powerful demonstration of this post-pandemic. In FY23, aeronautical income surged by a remarkable 132% to $219.5 million. This was a clear indicator of the rapid travel recovery. Within this, we have specific components. First, airfield income, which are essentially landing charges. These are levied on airlines based on the maximum certified takeoff weight, or MCPOW, of their aircraft. Think of it as paying more if your plane is bigger and heavier, like a truck paying a higher toll based on its weight. Simple enough. For FY23, these charges amounted to $75.6 million, reflecting both flight volume and the types of aircraft coming in. Then there's the passenger services charge, or PSC. This is a per-passenger fee, and it constitutes the largest portion of aeronautical income. It's incredibly sensitive to passenger volumes, especially the higher-value international travelers. They generally pay more.
The dramatic rebound in international travel post-COVID saw PSC revenues skyrocket by an astonishing 293% to $132.9 million in FY23 alone.
Wow.
Yeah, it really underscores the segment's high operational leverage to passenger recovery. Meaning, once the lights are on and the staff are paid, every additional passenger brings in almost pure profit. Finally, we have aircraft parking charges, which are, as you might guess, fees based on MCTOW and how long an aircraft is parked on the airfield. Pretty straightforward. Okay, now for the second engine, the unregulated growth engine. This primarily comprises non-aeronautical ventures. This is arguably the primary growth engine for AIA, focusing on high-margin activities that are largely shielded from direct price regulation. This allows AIA to capture a greater share of spending from passengers and other commercial entities across its extensive precinct without the same direct oversight as its aeronautical services. Mm. It's where they can truly be entrepreneurial, you know?
Right. Less constraints.
Exactly. Let's do a revenue deep dive into these non-aeronautical activities, which are, yeah, largely unregulated. Mm. First, retail. AIA earns significant concession revenue from a diverse portfolio of retailers within its terminals. Think duty-free shops, specialty stores, food and beverage outlets, foreign exchange services, even advertising space. The reopening of the international terminal after the pandemic was truly transformative for this segment. FY23 retail income exploded by an incredible 477% to $130.9 million.
477%? That's huge. It's massive. Imagine walking into a bustling mall. It's that kind of commercial activity restarting almost overnight. There's also been a strategic shift to a single duty-free operator, Alia Duty Free, under a contract extending to mid-2025. That's expected to streamline operations and maybe enhance the customer experience. Next, and this is where your earlier insight really comes into play, property. This is arguably AIA's most significant long-term value driver. It's huge. The company leverages its vast 1,500-hectare freehold land holding. That's land it owns outright. A massive advantage compared to many airports operating on leased land to develop and lease a portfolio of cargo facilities, aircraft hangars, and high-value commercial properties. Its flagship development, the Landing Business Park, continues to attract blue-chip tenants, driving strong rental growth. In FY23, property rental income grew a robust 27% to $132.9 million. Not quite 477%, but still very strong, consistent growth.
Very stable income, I guess.
Incredibly stable. To give you a sense of its scale, the entire investment property portfolio was valued at $2.9 billion at the end of FY23. It boasts an impressive occupancy rate of 99% and a long-weighted average lease term, or WALT, of 8.6 years. This provides incredibly stable and predictable cash flows, almost like a separate, high-performing real estate investment trust, or REIT, just sitting within the airport company.
That's quite a diversification.
It really is.
Yeah.
And finally, under non-aeronautical, we have transport and other. This category primarily includes car parking and hotel revenue. As passenger numbers recovered, car park income grew a solid 120% to $57.7 million in FY23. Apparently benefiting from a sustained post-pandemic preference for private vehicle use over public transport or ride shares.
Yeah, I can see that. People wanted their own space.
Exactly. We all experienced that desire for personal space after the lockdowns, and it seems that extended to how people got to the airport.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, how do these two engines, the regulated and unregulated parts, actually work together? The report uses a really interesting phrase, a unique barbell risk profile. It sounds like they're balancing stability with high growth, which is, well, a rare combination.
It's an excellent analogy, really illustrating their strategic positioning. The regulated side, the aeronautical business, provides stability and predictable, albeit capped, cash flows tied to its regulated asset base. It's the sturdy, foundational part, ensuring a baseline income. In contrast, the unregulated property business offers much higher growth potential, behaving more like that REIT we discussed. This structure provides a natural hedge. For instance, during periods of intense regulatory pressure on aeronautical charges or maybe slow passenger growth, the property portfolio can provide a resilient earnings base that isn't directly impacted by those airport-specific headwinds.
Right, it cushions the blow.
Precisely.
Conversely, when travel demand is strong, the aeronautical and retail segments deliver powerful operational leverage, remember, once those fixed costs are covered. A small increase in passengers can lead to a much larger increase in profits. So this dual-engine model really complicates a simple valuation approach for the company as a whole, and it strongly supports the use of the sum of the parts, or SOTP, methodology to accurately assess the distinct risk and growth profiles of each business unit. You can't just put a single label on it. It's truly hybrid, offering investors a unique blend of stability and growth potential. #3, core operational metrics and market position.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit then and dig into some of the key operational metrics that really show the airport's pulse, you know, how it's recovering and performing on the ground, or rather, in the air.
Absolutely. And the data reveals a robust recovery, though, with some nuances. For FY24, total passengers reached 18.5 million. That's a 17% increase year over year. This growth was notably led by a big 29% surge in international passengers, reaching 10.1 million. Meanwhile, domestic passenger growth was more modest, up just 5%, hitting 8.5 million.
That difference is interesting. International booming, domestic lagging a bit.
Exactly. It really highlights the strong return of long-haul international travel compared to a more constrained domestic market, maybe capacity issues domestically. The rebound from the pandemic lows, especially in FY23, was dramatic, though. Total passengers surged by an incredible 183% to 15.9 million that year, driven mostly by a, get this, 480% explosion in international passengers to 7.8 million. Domestic was up 90% to 8.1 million too, but international was a real story.
Wow, 480% just shows how shut down things were.
Totally. And it demonstrates that high fixed cost nature of the business and its significant earnings leverage as borders reopened. As for current capacity, AIA serves 27 airlines flying to 42 international destinations, solidifying its status as the country's premier hub. Looking further ahead, the long-term master plan is designed to significantly expand this capacity. The infrastructure is planned to handle approximately 38 million passengers annually by FY47.
38 million, that's nearly double current levels, a massive leap in capability.
It is. Now let's talk about New Zealand's unique aviation market structure, because that heavily influences Auckland Airport. The domestic aviation market in New Zealand is actually one of the most highly concentrated in the developed world. It's quite unusual. The national carrier, Air New Zealand, holds a dominant market share of approximately 86%. Jetstar provides only limited competition, primarily on the main trunk routes, Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch. This duopoly structure, or near monopoly really, has profound implications for the entire aviation ecosystem in the country, creates both challenges and, well, opportunities, depending on your perspective.
This raises an important question. How does this duopoly affect the airport's strategy? Is that purely a limitation, or are there maybe any hidden benefits to having such a concentrated domestic market from AIA's perspective, like a stable anchor tenant?
It's a very sharp observation. From AIA's public statements, they mostly frame it as a limitation. AIA management has publicly argued that this market concentration actually leads to constrained capacity and elevated airfares for consumers, particularly in regional markets. They see it as a limiting factor for the entire industry's potential growth. And this situation has apparently been exacerbated by ongoing fleet challenges faced by Air New Zealand, which have limited its ability to expand services, further cementing that status quo. So from AIA's perspective, its massive infrastructure investment is partly a strategic tool, a way to enable greater competition by providing the necessary capacity for new entrants or maybe for Jetstar to grow.
Ah, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Kind of. But this stance, naturally, puts it directly at odds with the incumbent carrier, Air New Zealand, who, you know, probably benefits from the existing structure. So while it creates maybe some stability with one dominant partner, it also limits their ability to grow traffic as quickly as they might with more airline competition pushing each other.
What's fascinating here, though, is just how entrenched Auckland Airport's competitive advantage truly is. It's almost unassailable, wouldn't you say? But couldn't that unassailable position also lead to complacency, or perhaps make them an even bigger target for regulatory intervention if they look too powerful?
Those are valid concerns, and the regulator is certainly keeping a close eye, no doubt about it. But you're right. Its position is fundamentally unassailable. AIA functions as the nation's primary gateway to the world. That role is fortified by geography and sheer infrastructure scale. It is, quite simply, the only airport in New Zealand capable of supporting a wide range of long-haul, wide-body aircraft, the big jets. This makes it the sole entry point for the vast majority of international airlines and tourists. It's not just an airport, it plays a critical role in facilitating tourism and trade, which are absolutely vital to New Zealand's economy. This gives it a powerful and enduring competitive moat. Furthermore, AIA owns its entire 1,500-hectare precinct as freehold land. Think about that again. 1,500 hectares. Yeah. Owned outright.
That's huge.
It's a massive strategic advantage compared to many international peers that operate on leasehold land, where they don't own the underlying property. This ownership provides immense long-term optionality for both aeronautical and commercial development. It underpins the company's entire growth strategy for decades to come. It's a huge asset. But despite that unassailable position, the relationship between AIA and its airline customers, particularly Air New Zealand, is incredibly complex. It's both symbiotic, they need each other, and, yeah, deeply contentious. Airlines are, after all, the airport's primary revenue source, yet they are also its most vocal critics, especially concerning capital expenditure and the resulting increases in aeronautical charges.
They have to pay the landing fees, after all.
Exactly. They have to pay for the infrastructure, and they naturally want those charges to be as low as possible.
So this really frames it as a fundamental strategic battle for the aviation sector's profit pool, doesn't it? Auckland Airport's argument is that its massive, non-discretionary infrastructure program absolutely requires increased charges, while the airlines argue that the spending is excessive and will ultimately harm demand by making flights more expensive.
Exactly. And AIA counters that the investment is essential for resilience and that failing to invest would actually entrench the domestic duopoly by creating capacity constraints down the line, which they argue would ultimately harm consumers through higher fares and less choice in the long run. It's a very public and often heated debate. The Commerce Commission, the independent regulator, acts as the de facto referee in this dispute. Its review of the PSE4 pricing plan, that's the plan for 2023 to 2027, acknowledged the need for the investment, but notably deemed AIA's targeted returns to be excessive, forcing a downward revision. AIA had to revise its target return on aeronautical assets down to 7.82% from an initially higher figure.
So the regulator did step in and push back.
They did. This dynamic creates a significant risk for investors, as a sustained and public conflict could potentially invite greater political intervention, and maybe a permanent shift away from the previously favorable light-touch regulatory model towards something tougher. However, despite these ongoing tensions, route development has actually been a significant post-pandemic success story for Auckland Airport. The recovery has been particularly strong on lucrative North American routes. Capacity there was actually forecast to exceed pre-COVID levels in the 2023-2024 summer season.
Exceed pre-COVID. That's impressive.
It is. It indicates robust demand for long-haul travel, highlighting New Zealand's enduring appeal as a destination. Additionally, the recovery of routes to and from China has also been robust, with capacity quickly returning toward pre-pandemic levels. That's obviously a major positive given China's importance as a tourism market for New Zealand. Auckland International Airport's financial history over the past decade, well, it really tells a compelling story of three distinct eras. You've got steady pre-pandemic growth, then a severe pandemic-induced downturn, and then a powerful subsequent recovery. This trajectory clearly highlights the business's inherent sensitivity to global travel trends and, again, its powerful operational leverage. Let's break down this long-term trend, looking at, say, FY15 through the first half of FY25. The pre-COVID era from FY15 to FY19 was characterized by strong and consistent growth. This was fueled by a global tourism boom and increasing air connectivity, just good times for travel. Revenue expanded impressively from about $508 million in FY15 to $743 million in FY19. That's a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of 10%. Underlying profit, which is the company's preferred measure of core performance, grew even faster, from $176 million to $275 million over the same period. That's a CAGR of 11.7%. This performance was solidly underpinned by robust passenger growth, which often saw double-digit annual increases back then.
Then the music stopped.
Completely. Then came the COVID-19 impact from FY20 to FY22. This period saw a catastrophic collapse in aviation activity and, consequently, AIA's financial performance. Revenue plummeted from its FY19 peak down to $567 million in FY20 and hit a low point of a restated $281 million in FY21, less than half the peak. For the first time ever, the company recorded underlying losses, about $39 million loss in FY21 and an $11 million loss in FY22. This truly demonstrates the severe impact of the near total cessation of international travel. It was an unprecedented challenge, no doubt about it. However, the story shifts dramatically with the post-COVID recovery, spanning FY23 through the first half of FY25. The reopening of New Zealand's borders in 2022 triggered a powerful V-shaped recovery. In FY23, revenue more than doubled to $626 million, and the company returned to a strong underlying profit of $148 million, back in the black. This momentum continued into the first half of FY25, so the 6 months to December 2024. Revenue rose 13% year-over-year to about $500 million for the half. However, underlying profit growth was more subdued, up only 2%, reaching $148 million again. So revenue up strongly, but profit growth slowing.
Exactly. It signals the emergence of inflationary pressures on operating costs starting to bite, and maybe a normalization of growth rates after that initial explosive rebound.
Yeah.
If you look at Table 1 in the report, you can really see this dramatic swing, the peak passenger numbers pre-COVID, the deep trough, and back towards recovery, along with the corresponding revenue and profit figures. It's quite a picture.
This concept of operational leverage sounds incredibly powerful for a business like this. How does it actually manifest in AIA's profitability, and why is it so critical now, especially with all this investment?
It's absolutely fundamental to understanding airport economics. Think of it like a theater, right? Once you've paid for the building, the staff, the lights, those are your fixed costs. Every extra ticket sold after that brings in almost pure profit. Airports work much the same way. AIA is a business with a very high fixed cost base, maintaining runways, terminals, security infrastructure. Those costs don't change much whether there are 5 million or 20 million passengers passing through. Because of this, as passenger volumes increase, revenues grow much faster than operating expenses and margins expand significantly. We saw this clearly in FY23, where the EBITDAFI margin, that's a key profitability metric, recovered sharply to 63%, up from a mere 48% in the prior year. Huge jump. It demonstrates that once the fixed costs are covered, a large portion of each additional dollar of revenue flows directly to the bottom line. That's why the return to passengers is just so vital for them. When it comes to returns, return on invested capital, or ROIC, will be the critical metric to monitor throughout the current heavy investment cycle. While returns were healthy pre-COVID, the primary challenge for management now will be to deploy billions in new capital in a manner that generates returns above its cost of capital. Especially as the asset base swells with all this new infrastructure, you have to earn a return on all that new spending. The regulatory return for aeronautical assets during PSE4, which we mentioned earlier, was initially targeted by AIA at 8.73%. Remember that?
Yeah, the regulator pushed back on that.
Right. Following the Commerce Commission's review, AIA revised its target down to 7.82%. That figure falls within the Commission's sort of reasonable range. This 7.82% will serve as a key benchmark for the performance and value accretion of all these new aeronautical investments. It basically ensures they're not overspending relative to the allowed return.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, with all this massive investment, how prudently has management handled its balance sheet and cash flow? Are they taking on too much risk to fund this growth, or are they playing it relatively safe?
Well, I'd say on the contrary, management has taken a very proactive and prudent approach to balance sheet management, especially given the scale of the capital program ahead. Recognizing the existential threat posed by the pandemic, AIA executed a crucial $1.2 billion equity raise way back in April 2020. That was a critical move to ensure liquidity and financial stability during truly unprecedented times. Save them, really. Then, as it embarked on its new investment cycle, the company raised a further $1.4 billion in equity in September 2024.
Another big raise.
Yeah. This capital was explicitly raised to fund the massive infrastructure program while simultaneously maintaining the company's strong A credit rating from S&P and supporting its dividend policy. At the end of FY23, the balance sheet remained conservative with a debt-to-debt plus equity ratio of just 18.2%. That's quite low for an infrastructure company. This demonstrates a deliberate strategy to fund growth without unduly leveraging the company, showing very sound financial stewardship, I think.
Good to hear. What about dividends? You mentioned the policy.
Right. Regarding dividends, AIA has historically been a reliable dividend payer, with a stated policy of distributing 100% of its underlying net profit after tax. This made it a very attractive investment for income-focused shareholders prior to the pandemic. It was a yield staple for many. However, the dividend was, well, by necessity, suspended between FY20 and FY22 due to the severe impact of the pandemic and also the terms of its debt covenant waivers during that time.
Had to preserve cash.
Absolutely. It was a tough period for all travel-related companies. No surprise there. The good news, though, is that the dividend was reinstated for FY23 with a final payment of 4.0 cents per share. And for the first half of FY25, an interim dividend of 6.25 cents per share was declared. The resumption of these payments is a strong signal of confidence from the board in the company's recovery and future prospects. However, the future trajectory of the dividend, well, that will be a careful balancing act between this policy of returning profits to shareholders and the immense funding requirements of the ongoing capital expenditure program.
So that 100% payout might be under pressure.
It might be. If you look at Table 1 again in the report, you can clearly see the historical dividend per share, how it dropped to zero, and then its gradual reinstatement. It visually reinforces this whole financial story. Boom, bust, recovery, and now careful management.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting and becomes clear why this is being called a once-in-a-generation infrastructure program. What does that actually entail in terms of scale and scope, and what does it mean for the passenger experience? That's key, too.
It truly is immense, and yes, it will redefine the passenger experience. The centerpiece of AIA's strategy is this massive infrastructure upgrade. We're talking about an aeronautical capital expenditure program forecast to be $6.6 billion just across the next two regulatory periods, PSE4, that's FY23-27, and PSE5, FY28-33. When you look at the broader picture, it's part of a 10-year plan totaling approximately $10
billion. $10 billion, that's a serious number.
It's huge. This isn't just incremental improvements. It's a complete overhaul and expansion designed to future-proof the airport for decades. Let's look at the key projects within this. The most significant single project is the new $2.2 billion domestic terminal. And crucially, it will be integrated directly with the international terminal building.
Yeah, finally. That transfer is, well, let's just say it's not ideal currently.
Exactly. Anyone who's done that international to domestic transfer knows it's currently a bit of a trek, involving a bus ride and often a sense of disorientation. This new terminal isn't just an upgrade. It's a huge win for passenger sanity, creating a seamless transfer process. It's a proper game changer. It's scheduled for completion by FY29, so still a few years away. But this project will replace the outdated 1960s-era domestic facility and add 12 new domestic jet gates. What's also notable is that the project is apparently already over 20% complete. Hawkins Construction is contracted for the main build under a collaborative model.
What does that mean, collaborative model?
It's specifically designed to mitigate execution risk. It fosters more of a partnership approach rather than a traditional, sometimes adversarial, contractor relationship. They work together more closely on design and problem solving early on.
Makes sense for such a complex build.
Definitely smart given the scale. Alongside the new terminal, AIA is undertaking a substantial 250,000 square meter airfield expansion. That's to add new taxiways and remote aircraft stands, boosting overall operational efficiency and capacity on the airfield itself. Other critical projects include a new transport hub right at the front of the international terminal, an expanded cargo precinct to support New Zealand's vital trade links, and important upgrades to the contingent runway, the backup runway, to build resilience against disruptions. Always good to have a solid plan B. Interestingly, the long-planned second runway, the northern runway, it remains a part of the long-term master plan. But its timeline has been pushed out significantly, now to approximately FY38.
FY38, that's a long way off.
It is. It reflects a pragmatic focus on maximizing the efficiency and capacity of the existing runway system first, before embarking on building an entirely new one. It shows, I think, a sensible staging of investment. Don't overbuild too soon. Now, beyond the runways and terminals, that high-margin property development pipeline is a truly crucial growth vector. It significantly de-risks the overall business from the volatility and regulatory pressures of the aeronautical segment. By transforming parts of its vast 1,500-hectare land bank into prime commercial real estate, AI is actively creating a substantial, unregulated earnings stream. This strategy is effectively evolving the company from a pure airport operator into a diversified infrastructure and real estate enterprise. That's a shift that, over the long term, should command a higher valuation multiple as the property portfolio's contribution to overall earnings grows. It's truly a strategic evolution for the company's identity.
So they're becoming a landlord as much as an airport operator.
In many ways, yes. Let's look at some of these key property developments. There's the Landing Business Park, which is AIA's premium mixed-use business park. It has successfully attracted major global and national tenants like IKEA, DHL, Foodstuffs, and Ebos Group. Big names. These companies are drawn to the location's unparalleled connectivity, being right on the airport's doorstep, a massive logistical advantage for them. Then there's Manawa Bay, a major new development. This is planned as a 100-store premium outlet shopping destination. It's targeting a 5-star green sustainability rating and is designed to be a major retail attraction for both travelers and the wider Auckland population. It further diversifies AIA's non-aeronautical revenue streams beyond just airport-specific retail. It's a bold move to create a destination in itself, really.
A shopping mall at the airport, basically.
Yeah, a high-end one, yeah. On the aviation side, AIA's core strategy is still, of course, to sustainably grow air connectivity. By investing in capacity and actively working with airlines to establish new routes, the airport aims to foster greater competition and provide more choice for travelers flying in and out of New Zealand. This approach not only grows the regulated aeronautical revenue base, but also has that powerful multiplier effect on those high-margin non-aeronautical revenues like retail and car parking. More passengers mean more potential customers for everything else. The long-term master plan, which projects passenger numbers to roughly double to 38 million by FY47, is fundamentally predicated on this continued growth, which, of course, necessitates the current massive infrastructure investment program. It all links together.
What about technology? How is AIA leveraging digital transformation? It feels like airports are becoming much more tech-driven, moving beyond just, you know, concrete and steel.
They absolutely are. And AIA is certainly investing here, too. They are making significant investments in technology, embarking on a 10-year digital transformation program. It's designed to create a more seamless passenger journey, improve operational efficiency across the board, and enhance their commercial offerings. This digital transformation is truly a key enabler for all the physical infrastructure upgrades. It ensures the airport isn't just bigger, but smarter. Specifically, for passenger processing, the airport is replacing approximately 100 traditional check-in counters with modern self-service kiosks and automated bag drops.
Fewer queues, hopefully.
That's the plan. This initiative aligns with international best practices and is expected to reduce passenger processing time significantly and free up valuable terminal space, improving the flow and overall experience. For personalized customer engagement, AIA has implemented Adobe Journey Optimizer. That's a sophisticated platform allowing for orchestrated, personalized communication with travelers. By sending timely and relevant messages, things like parking reminders or maybe retail offers based on customer preferences, the airport is creating a more connected and valuable customer experience. And apparently, this initiative has already delivered a very impressive 72% increase in automation-driven revenue. So it pays off directly.
72%. That shows the power of targeted marketing.
It really does. And for operational efficiency, the company is actively exploring and implementing advanced technologies like Airport Collaborative Decision Making, or ACDM, that helps optimize airfield operations. They're also actively investigating the use of AI and robotics to further enhance efficiency and passenger services. Really looking to the future of airport management. Okay, so the quality of capital allocation and project execution, this will truly be the ultimate determinant of shareholder returns for Auckland Airport over the next decade. It really boils down to this. With an unprecedented investment program underway, management's track record and approach to balancing all these competing priorities are under intense scrutiny. It's a massive undertaking, and how they spend this money, this $10 billion, will define their future. Historically, AIA's management team does have a track record of delivering complex projects. Prior to the pandemic, for instance, the company successfully completed that multi-stage 36,000-square-meter redevelopment of the International Terminal Departure Area. That was a project that significantly enhanced passenger experience and retail offerings. They got that done. Furthermore, the property division has consistently delivered new, high-quality developments on time and on budget, successfully attracting major tenants. So they have proven capabilities in certain areas.
Okay.